Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Hey folks, Jim Hansen from Black5.net and a contributing editor to BigPeace.com sitting in for Frank Gaffney today on Secure Freedom Radio. Frank is busy today launching a vital effort called the Coalition for the Common Defense. This is a collection of like-minded individuals with experience in national security and military matters who see a tremendous danger to the efforts underway in Congress right now to use the military and defense budget as a cash cow to ensure that none of the sacred entitlement programs have to take any major cuts. And can I just go ahead right now and register my visceral disgust with the very idea and the terminology of an entitlement program? And yeah, I just did scare quotes when I said that. Because the very idea that there are people entitled to my money, your money, to other people's money is disgusting. It is antithetical to everything I believe our country stands for. Nobody is entitled to anyone else's money. And if you want to get right down to it and declare there might be one segment of society that has a right to call themselves entitled to our tax dollars, that would be those serving in the military who volunteered to risk their lives and in some cases give their lives to keep the rest of us safe. And yet somehow the Congress critters can find it a viable way to cut our spending addiction by taking military budgets, taking the actual personnel budget, taking benefits away from those who have volunteered to serve and in many cases have given their lives for our country. I am stunned and amazed that this is on the table, and yet there it is. So Coalition for the Common Defense, it's a group that Frank has organized. I am a member. It is folks who are going to go ahead and present this information to the American public and ask you to help us point out to Congress that we would just as soon not make ourselves unsafe in America and unsafe around the world because we don't have the guts to cut big spending programs. You could cut the entire defense budget and still not balance our budget. We'd still run a deficit and have absolutely no security at all. So what we need to do is face facts. Military spending may have some fat in it, but that's not where the problem is. So what we need to look at, and I think the biggest problem is we've lost sight of the idea that this is a dangerous planet we live on. Yeah, okay, we can, you know, people can look at it and say, oh, well, you know, there's some suicide bombers here. Yeah, maybe there's some crazy people in Yemen. But, you know, we'll just send some drones over. We'll play whack-a-mole and everything will be fine. Yeah, well, what does that do for us in the long run? Huh. And first of all, it hasn't helped us defeat the Islamists. They are still running around. I mean, the fact that we fight them other places means that you squeeze them like a water balloon. You get them one place, they pop up in another. But it also loses sight of the fundamental fact that they aren't the biggest threat we face. Yeah, I realize it's tough for people, you know, to keep any sense of perspective, but there's a couple giant countries out there who do not have our best interests at heart. One of them is our main creditor, the Chinese. Now, what do you think they're doing with their defense budget? While we're looking at ours as a place to cut and cut to the bone or beyond, they're expanding. They're building fighters. They're building aircraft carriers. They are projecting power in their entire region. They look at this as an opportunity. They've seen our intrepid leader, the Obama, kowtowing to tin pot dictators, including their own, all around the world. And all that means to them is they're not likely to face any pushback from us. And if we cut our defense budget in the way we're looking at, we not only won't have the ability, we not only won't have the will, which I don't believe we have right now, but we won't have the ability. And let's note another major player on the world stage, the Russians. Anybody remember them? We used to have a Cold War, which we won because we spent money on defense. Wow, there's a shocker. We bankrupted the Soviet Union as they tried to use their failing system to keep pace with the American economy. Now, that seemed to work pretty well. It kept us out of a nuclear war. It shut them down. And now we have reaped the rewards for the past 40 years of not having that giant threat to us looming every day. And yet we're looking at a situation now where if we cut in the places we're looking at, we have near non-existent missile defense. We're looking at major cuts to our aircraft programs. We're looking at major cuts to our naval ship strength. And we're actually looking at cuts to the end strength of the Army and Marine Corps. I mean, I don't understand how anyone can look at that and not think that will embolden our enemies. If you are another major player on the world stage, if you are a tyrant in your own country, if you are a terrorist group, you can look at that and say, well, they can't keep track of all of us, you know? They can't manage to go ahead and deter the major countries. We can't stop the minor countries, and we certainly can't follow the terrorists every place they can go if we don't have the military strength we need. So I guess, folks, what I'm asking you to do, take a look at forthecommondefense.org. That's the website for Coalition for the Common Defense. There will be calls to actions posted there. I'm assuming that since most of you folks are listening to this program, you probably already know the number to your own Congress critters, but give another call. I mean, the time is now. If we don't do anything, Congress is going to destroy our military. They are going to leave us defenseless. And maybe not defenseless, but defenseless in any legitimate form. You know, the whole point of having a strong military is not that we want to maraud around the world like some global cowboy like the left likes to portray us. The whole point of having a strong military is you deter people from messing with you. You deter people from messing with our friends, from messing with the global economy. I mean, if we didn't patrol the blue seas, there would be no global trade. The U.S. Navy is quite possibly the largest enabling factor for global trade that there is. But, oh, let's go ahead and cut it, and all of a sudden, no one's going to take advantage of that. I mean, we barely have the will to oppose pirates in leaky boats off the coast of Somalia. Do you think if the U.S. military and the Navy fail to patrol the major shipping lanes, that that's not going to expand, that's not going to spread? I can tell you better than that. Seen it in action. So, folks, we need your help, as usual. You know, it's up to us. It's up to the active folks to oppose these cuts, to tell Congress to go ahead and look at, go ahead, scare quotes up, entitlements, as a place where they need to cut. I would be perfectly willing to discuss cuts to the defense budget if first they had looked at the programs that are actually bankrupting our country. You know, we had our credit rating dropped, and yet our answer is we'll borrow more money because we're scared to go ahead and cut the programs that are killing us. It's not defense, folks. It is not defense. And, you know, I don't want to make a simplistic point here, but every dime we spend on defense in this country keeps good workers at good jobs doing good things that keep us all safe. Why doesn't that come into play? I mean, we can throw hundreds of billions of dollars at fantasy green jobs where they have unicorn factories and rainbows running around. Or we can go ahead and employ qualified American workers doing good things in good factories for good companies that keep us all safe. Yeah, I don't know about you, but that's a pretty easy question for me. And my answer is knock it off. Stop cutting defense. And let's make sure that the money we spend, if we're going to spend it, if we're going to spend tax dollars, the first place to spend it is keeping us safe. Everything else comes second to that. And if that's too complicated for them, you know, I'm sorry, I could write it in starker terms, but I can't do it in a little chant for the hippies in the parks. I can't help those folks out who don't understand it. We'll keep them safe. It's up to you and me and everyone else to convince Congress not to go ahead and give them their fantasy world where there is no danger. So, folks, again, the group is called Coalition for the Common Defense. You can find it at the Center for Security Policy website or at forthecommondefense.org. The launch is today. Frank's down there. By the time you're hearing this, the launch will have happened down at the Congressional Visitor Center, and we will be in action trying to make sure that our defense budget is not the first place and only place we look for savings. Later on the show, we're going to have a gentleman named Bruce McQuain. He is another writer and contributor at Black Five. Bruce is an Army officer with considerable experience looking at how we take war to our enemies. He has done a lot of policy and doctrine work and will be able to explain just exactly how damaging these cuts will be to our ability to project force. In addition, we'll be talking with Bill Ardolino from the Long War Journal about how things are going in Afghanistan, and the answer is not that great. Back in a minute, this is Jim Hansen with Secure Freedom Radio.
We want to know what you think. Leave your comments at 1-800-332-7131.
My name is Sunday Hollis, and I totally lost the craving for sweets. I totally lost the craving for bread, even meat. And some people, you know, you would see people say, oh, well, you're eating a salad because you're trying to diet, but you just don't have a taste for any of the junk anymore. And it is so, so, so true. I'm thinking this is something that the celebrities are using. They're just not giving the meta system the credit for it. I've tried everything under the sun, and this is the only product that I have even called the company and asked them, could I sell it for them? This is a product where you can actually use the word awesome. I mean, and it is the whole essence of the word awesome.
Don't wait another minute to start losing weight. Call Judy Singer's The Meta System at 1-800-711-JUDY. That's 1-800-711-JUDY.
The first step in winning a war is to know whom you're fighting. 9 years after 9/11, the U.S. security establishment has failed to tell us. The very words we need to describe the war are being outlawed. We went from the war on terror under Bush to the war on man-made disasters under Obama. Neither identifies the threat doctrine behind the aggression, Islamic Sharia law. That's why the Center for Security Policy assembled Team B, an independent group of national security professionals, including Bill Clinton's Director of Central Intelligence, James Woolsey. The result is a book that challenges the assumptions of the current administration and exposes the supremacist nature of Sharia and the jihad its adherents are obliged to engage in. This report names the names of those responsible and makes plain the mortal peril now posed to America's Constitution, our national security, and way of life. For more information, visit ShariaTheThreat.com or order your copy of Sharia, The Threat to America at Amazon.com.
Experts say there is no shortage of crude oil.
There really is no shortage of oil at the moment.
So why do gasoline prices keep going up?
There's all this fear that's out there, and that really goes a long way to making prices go up.
And home prices seem to be headed even lower.
We really aren't seeing any markets that are showing any sustained recovery at this point.
Now more than ever, is this a timeout or a double dip?
It could halt the economy's recovery in its tracks.
1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Hey, folks, it's Jim Hansen back with some more Secure Freedom Radio. I am sitting in for Mr. Gaffney today as he is preparing to launch the Coalition for the Common Defense at the Congressional Visitor Center. The main thrust of that organization is making sure that we all understand why the massive defense cuts currently contemplated could be devastating to our national security. Now, here to talk with me about that is a gentleman named Bruce McQuain, who is also a writer, one of ours at Black Five, and runs the QNO website at QNO.net. He's a former military officer who has considerable experience wargaming how things would actually go in a scenario other than the simple wars we have now. So I wanted to talk with him about what these defense cuts may portend, and welcome to the show, Bruce.
Thanks, Jim.
Well, I guess we sit right now with an axe poised over the defense budget, which I think, unfortunately, has started to look like a cash cow to a lot of folks in Congress who have pet programs that they seem to value more highly than our national security. So I wanted to get initially your feeling for what the potential is for devastation to our national security by the massive defense cuts currently being contemplated.
Well, it appears that the attitude is we're in peace dividend version 2.0, and we know how that worked out. And we're about to do the same thing again in the name of austerity. And you described it as an axe. I see it as a meat axe. What they're talking about are across-the-board cuts that would literally gut our capability. They're talking about huge cuts to the end strengths of the Army and the Marine Corps. They're talking about taking down much of the funding for the F-35 Joint Strike Fighter, among many other things, reducing the ships in the Navy. And what that all means is we limit force projection at that point, and it requires us to make very hard choices as to where we project that power. In other words, we're going to have to be very careful about how we do that in the future, because we just don't have the or won't have the military that we have now.
Well, now, you bring up a couple of points that hinge directly on our ability to project power. One was end strength in the Navy, but one thing I think people have taken for granted for a very long time, and I was at Frank's Keeper of the Flame Awards dinner last night, and I was talking to an Air Force fighter pilot, and he said he spoke to some young interns in the defense industry, and they had no concept of the idea that we didn't always have air superiority. You know, that there was a point in time where enemy planes used to kill U.S. soldiers. And I, to my knowledge, the last time that happened was 1952 during the Korean War. So, I mean, give me an idea of the cuts currently, you know, that have been enacted and that are proposed to the F-35, and obviously the F-22 is gone, and how that affects our ability to actually control the airspace any place we want to operate.
Yes, we have and still have on the inventory what we call fourth generation fighters. They're the teens, the A-10, the F-15, F-16, that type thing. Those are airframes that were designed and built in the 70s and 80s. They're coming to the end, or many of them have already reached the end of their life. Plus, they're non-stealthy. So we have begun and have developed fifth generation fighters and multi-role fighters. That would be the F-22 and the F-35. But the first thing that happened that really had me scratching my head is the F-22 was supposed to replace all our air superiority fighters, the guys that go up and knock down enemy air. And we were going to replace around 2,000 air superiority fighters with about 2,000 Raptors F-22s. They cut the heck out of that program. We ended up with 180. Now, I'm sorry. We may be able to control the airspace in one small war, but we cannot project the power we need to anywhere consistently with 180 air superiority aircraft.
Yeah, the math doesn't work there.
Yeah, it doesn't work at all. So we have this huge fighter gap developing, all right? Well, what we were hoping to do is pick up the slack, and this is the way the F-35 was sold, was we'll pick up the slack with the F-35. It's a multi-role fighter. It's got probably the finest sensor suite in the world. It will be able to do beyond visual range engagements and that type of thing. Plus, by the way, it can run close air support. It can take out enemy air defenses. It can do a lot of things. It's deployable on the sea. It has the vertical takeoff and landing capability. I mean, it is a multi-role fighter.
So obviously we're going to buy a whole bunch of those, right?
Right. Yeah, we're going to buy about 2,500 of those until this came up. Hmm. And now we're talking about whacking the crap out of that program, too.
Well, now, all right, I'm a grunt. I mean, I'm a knuckle dragger. I'm a special forces guy, obviously. To me, we used to joke about the pilots. We used to make fun of them. But we did that knowing that no one was going to be shooting at us. No one was going to be dropping bombs on us. And the idea, I think, now is that because we're only going to do our fighting in places where there's no real armies opposing us or no real air forces opposing us, that's not a problem. But that's not the case. I mean, aren't our enemies, our frenemies, the Russians and the Chinese, building some fairly significant aircraft themselves?
Yeah, you have the T-50, which is Russia's version of the fifth-generation fighter. And you have the J-20 coming out of China, which most people think now, looking at its size and everything, is going to be more like the F-35 than the F-22. So, yeah, those guys, and trust me, they're going to export those fighters. Those things are going to be sold abroad. The Russians may do what they always do and send sell a downgraded option, but it is still a fifth-generation fighter facing our fourth-generation fighters. And, you know, that's really no contest, even with a downgraded fighter. They are set up to defeat fourth-generation fighters and will because they'll have the upgraded avionics suite and the whole shooting match. And, by the way, I'm a knuckle-dragger, too. I'm an infantry guy. And so I want aircraft up there, you know, on station that I can call in and knock out all these bad guys as they're trying to kill me. And the problem is, well, the problem is, Jim, you're not going to be able to do that if you give up air superiority.
So, I mean, that means we take out not just close air support from the jets and the other things, but, I mean, that means their attack helicopters, our drones, everything else that we use in the air, our refueling capabilities, the rest of those all go into jeopardy, don't they?
That's right. You have now placed your entire attack assets, you know, rotary wing attack assets like the attack helicopters, lift helicopters, just lifting troops in, for heaven's sake. Logistics, you can't, you know, that Chinook is now vulnerable. All of that becomes vulnerable when you give up air superiority or air dominance, and that's what we're about to do.
All right. Now, is there any way around this? I mean, I'm not 100% familiar with exactly all the whacks they're making to the budget, but, I mean, have they, as part of the current budget reconciliation acts and the rest of that, actually proposed more sweeping cuts to the F-35, which is pretty much all we have left?
Well, there's a study out right now talking about, it shows a summary of the 800 to 850 billion targets and savings, and they're talking about 42.6 billion coming off the Joint Strike Fighter. What they're also talking about in many cases is eliminating one of the versions. For instance, eliminating the F-35B, which is the Marine Corps' short takeoff and vertical landing machine.
Oh, we always screw the Marine Corps, don't we?
Well, yeah. And you know what? What's odd is that is the core, or that is the group that flew the first missions in Libya off of the USS Kearsarge with a Harrier. So, I mean, that capability would go away. We would have to then send in, a carrier task force to do what that ship was able to do.
So,
makes no sense.
Well, geez, I wish our national security was less of a political football. Now, all right, talking force projection again, so if we take the Marines, you know, short field and, you know, vertical takeoff and landing capability away, are they still talking about building a reasonable number of the rest of the planes?
Well, again, they're also talking about cutting Air Force, and they're also talking about cutting Navy. So, and that goes with that end strength part where they're talking about taking 2 to 3 carrier task force off the books. So, you know, the planes go with them. So, yeah, they're talking about cutting across the board our aviation capability, our close air and near superiority capability, and completely wiping out the fixed wing capability of the Marines. So you're looking at actually force projection then becomes more expensive because you've got to put a carrier task force in there with those Marines when they land because all they've got is rotary wing assets now. It's a terrible idea.
Well, and I also saw that you had a piece up at Black 5 that they made the first carrier landing for an F-35 just recently. Wasn't that just a week or so ago?
Well, actually, it was on the USS Wasp, which is like the Kearsarge. It's a short deck amphibious attack ship in which they carry a battalion of Marines on. And this is, yeah, he came in on the Wasp, did their first landing right on schedule. So the aircraft is looking great. Video's up at Black 5. You ought to take a look at it, folks. And it is very impressive.
Well, this is Jim Hansen doing Secure Freedom Radio. We'll be back talking on more defense cuts with Bruce McQuain from QNO.net.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Hi, NBA forward Kevin Durant from the Oklahoma City Thunder. Here with Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck to remind you to get moving every day.
Because when you get moving an hour a day,
you'll have more energy to do the things you like to do.
And that's a slam dunk.
Whether you like to shoot hoops like me, skateboard, ride a bike,
or dance on your roof, just move it your way.
For an hour a day. Because moving every day puts you on the offense towards a stronger you.
And that makes you part of a winning team.
I couldn't have said it better myself, Bugs.
So be a player.
Be a player.
Get up, play, and move it your way. Check out how to be a player at letsmove.gov.
Head online to get tips on great ways to get moving every day.
You said it at www.letsmove.gov. Let's hear that one more time, Doc. That's www.letsmove.gov. A message from the Ad Council and HHS.
For decades, the Democratic Republic of Congo has endured economic collapse, poverty, and war. More than 3.5 million people have died in the conflict. Today, rebel forces continue to wreak havoc in the eastern Kivu provinces. The International Rescue Committee estimates that 30,000 children have been recruited as soldiers, and thousands more have lost their parents. Most of these children lack the most basic level of goods, security, and most especially, clean drinking water. Yet, there is a well of hope coming to eastern Congo in a village called Uvira. Washington, D.C.'s National Community Church is partnering with Global Outreach to bring a water pipeline to the Congo for Christ compound, an orphanage for children who have lost their parents to war and AIDS. Building a clean water source will sustain the school, provide for the children, and hundreds more in the village. Go to www.waterforcongo.com. Learn about the work of Global Outreach and give. You can be part of the community in Uvira, and like a well, you can be a source of hope in life. www.waterforcongo.com.
In 1966 in Anchorage, Alaska, a talented child was born. He would go on to be one out of only 11 Alaskans to make it to the major leagues. The odds of him striking out more than 3,000 hitters? 1 in 33 million. The odds of this pitcher being selected to the Major League Baseball All-Star Game 6 times? 1 in 48 million. The odds of this fast-balling philanthropist winning the World Series 3 times? 1 in 3 million. The odds of this man having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 110. Hi, I'm Kurt Schilling. Learn the signs of autism at autismspeaks.org. Autism is getting closer to home. From 1 in 5,000 only 20 years ago, today 1 in 110 children are diagnosed. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
What are you doing?
Filling out a loan application.
I can help you get approved, you know.
Really? How?
With this.
A bag of sand?
It's not a bag. It's a pouch. And it's not sand. It's credit fairy dust.
Credit fairy dust?
Yes. I sprinkle some fairy dust on the application, and your credit rating magically improves.
There's no such thing as the credit fairy.
An unbeliever now. But what will you think when your loan is approved?
I'll think my credit score improved because I paid my bills on time, kept my credit card balances low, and only opened a new card if I really needed it.
It's the dust.
It's sand.
Don't deny the credit fairy.
There's no magic to improving your credit, but there is help, and it's free. Go to creditfairy.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the Consumer Bankers Foundation, the Leadership Conference on Civil Rights Education Fund, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Frank Effney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Hey, folks, it's Jim Hansen back with more Secure Freedom Radio. I'm sitting in for Frank today, as they should have, by the time you hear this, already have launched the Coalition for the Common Defense down at the Congressional Visitor Center, trying to make sure that we don't destroy our national security while trying to make sure that everybody who's... cashing in on Uncle Sugar's largesse doesn't take away from the fact that we need to keep our country safe. Joining me for another segment is Bruce McQueen. He is one of our writers at Black Five, former military officer and gentleman with a considerable amount of experience wargaming out how we actually fight against the real enemies. I mean, the Islamists are dangerous, but let's be perfectly clear. They're not the only folks who make me nervous and who should be keeping some of us in the planning stages up at night. And, Bruce, I want to talk now, I guess, in a larger way about what the defense cuts that have already happened and the ones that are being proposed, what they would do to our ability to deter the large enemies, and I called them frenemies last segment. You know, we pretend the Chinese own half of our debt or so. You know, the Russians like to smile at us and stab us in the back with the other hand. But where do we stand now as far as our ability to deter their expansionism?
Well, probably right now we're in pretty good shape, but we're looking at an era where we may be much less able to deter that expansionism if these cuts go through. You know, the Chinese, for instance, just launched their first aircraft carrier. Now, they had bought it from an Eastern European country, and they've refurbished it and all that stuff. So they're not really, you know, putting out their first version of an aircraft carrier, but they're learning how to use that asset. And, you know, the Chinese also call the water, the ocean, blue soil. And they consider part of that blue soil theirs, and they're gonna go take it and keep it. And as they grow stronger, they're gonna become more aggressive about that. We're already hearing about the possibility of war with Japan or Vietnam or whatever over Ireland. So there's no question. I don't know that the Chinese are necessarily looking to engage in world domination, but they are certainly interested in expanding their influence regionally.
And that's something. I saw a map where they had actually redrawn the territorial waters. You know,
yes.
they looked at the entire South China Sea, I guess apparently, since it's got their name in it, as their backyard, like you said, as their blue soil. And they just completely have disregarded from they're fishing in other people's territorial waters. They're about to float a large oil platform down by the Philippines. I mean, it seems to me it may not be global domination, but like you said, they certainly are doing, you know, a greater Chinese co-prosperity sphere a la the Japanese back in the day as far as trying to push their influence in that region.
Yes, they're an energy-hungry country, and what they're going to do is they're going to go out and secure their supply lines militarily, and that's exactly what they're building to do. And what that means is their neighbors are going to be in bad shape as far as who wins that battle and who controls those seas, because China is going to push out there and try and control them. And without a U.S. Military to kind of counterbalance that and keep them in check, they're going to do it.
Well, now, all right, what do you think the odds are? First of all, what do you think the odds are from a strategic perspective that we're going to do much to counter that? And second, what are the defense cuts going to do as far as our ability, should we get the will, to actually oppose any of these moves?
Well, I think you hit on the big one, the will to do it. You know, do we continue to help Taiwan defend itself, or do we hang them out to dry? And that's really the key. Do we make them stick with international law and keep the oceans open for everyone, or do we allow them to engage in aggressive actions that essentially make it their sea? I can't answer that question, but I can tell you that with the way that we're looking at defense cuts right now, the probability of us being more aggressive about it are cut by every carrier task force we cut.
I mean, people forget, you know, I love, one of my favorite photos I've ever seen is the one of, I think it's the Reagan or whatever, it's one of our giant aircraft carriers with all the planes on it, coming towards you with the prow coming towards you. It says 90,000 tons of diplomacy. You know, I mean, that's perfect Klaus Witzian logic right there. You know, I mean, war is simply diplomacy followed to its illogical conclusion. If diplomacy doesn't work, you have to have, or for diplomacy to work, you have to have the threat of the iron fist inside the velvet glove. If we stop that, we encourage the Russians and the Chinese and other folks to go ahead and expand.
Well, the one thing the Chinese understand is blunt force, and or the willingness to use it. You know, the lift the hammer, you better swing it down and hit something. And we have the capability of making them play nice in the South China Sea. Whether we have the will or not, and whether we'll have the forces or not, are still up for debate. And that's the problem. These cuts are very, very dangerous in that regard.
Now, is it just end strength? Because, I mean, if we don't have the operating funds to float our boats around, then we, let alone the will, you know, you have to decide to do it, you have to have the capability to do it, and then you have to have the money to pay for the gas. That 90,000 tons of diplomacy takes a little, you know, oil to move around the ocean.
Yep, you're right. Those task forces, and thankfully some of them are nuclear, but those task forces, it takes a lot of money to deploy a task force. There's no question about it. And we do it constantly. And those two are going to be things that are on the cutting board. I mean, as you pointed out earlier, there seems to be an attitude that we can solve our problems on the back of our defense programs. And we can leave, you know, cuts in other areas alone or make them minimal. And when we do that and we cut across the board, we cut the ability to project power. We'll have more carriers sitting in dock than we'll have deployed. And you know, that doesn't do anybody any good.
Well, we can always deploy the USS Hillary Clinton, right? Wow, that's
worked.
Cool.
That's worked real well.
I'm going to take that back because I got to say something. I have really been pleasantly surprised by Hillary's tenure as Secretary of State. You know, I think she was put in a bad position by Obama on purpose. And I think to the extent that she could, she's done a decent job with the State Department. But like I said previously, the State Department's mission is minimized and made incredibly more difficult if the people we're negotiating with don't believe we can follow through with the threats that are implied in diplomacy.
You're exactly right, and that's kind of what we've seen. We've seen, various countries here and there take steps that they probably wouldn't take had there been a stronger leader or a more aggressive foreign policy in place. But, you know, this open hand, let's talk thing has not worked well. And Hillary's worked her tail off to try to make it work. I agree with you. But
Obama keeps sending, you know, Christmas cards and birthday cards to the Iranian mullahs. That's really not showing too much backbone. He kowtows to pretty much every foreign leader he sees. You know, it's tough to take us seriously.
And we both know that in the world of foreign diplomacy, you were talking about anarchy. And they will do what is to their best advantage, to heck with everybody else. And if they see or sense weakness in the United States, they will try to take advantage of it.
Okay, so, I mean, is the best hope we have then for some, you know, magic solution to come out of this super committee? You know, John Kyle was at Frank's Keep of the Flame dinner last night, and he talked about it. He's one of the Republicans. He's our best hope on that committee for stopping defense being gutted. But do you think there's any chance at all of them coming to some conclusion that doesn't lead to sequestration and the massive, you know, cuts that come with that?
Given the political polarization and lack of compromise that has really been a feature of this administration and really politics for the last 10 years, I personally am really pessimistic about it. But what they have to do is they have to look at defense and take a scalpel to it and not a meat axe. We know that there are going to be cuts, and we know there are places you can cut. But, Lord, across the board haircut, that would be the worst case scenario.
And that's really what's contemplated. I mean, that's what happens. It's an across the board. There's
right.
No ability to change that. That's what the law says.
That's correct. They will take a percentage cut across the board in every nook and cranny of the Pentagon, which means the F-35 gets nailed. Our Navy gets nailed. The Air Force, just across the board, everything goes down.
Well, gee, Bruce, I really appreciate that optimistic outlook you've got there. You know, that's, I think, I always say whenever I come to guest host Frank's show that I walk away needing a Valium because everybody I talk to has such wonderful news. Folks, that was Bruce McQuain. He's one of our writers at black5.net. Also runs the wonderful Q&O blog at Q&O.net, a place you can go for more informed commentary on issues regarding defense, national security, and our national politics as a whole. I appreciate your being with us, Bruce. Next segment, we will have Bill Ardolino from the Long War Journal telling us about his recent trip to Afghanistan. This is Jim Hansen doing Secure Freedom Radio.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
I was able to lose the 80 pounds I gained due to pregnancy. It was pretty easy to eat whatever I wanted and not think about it.
The Meta System from Judy Singer has been helping make weight loss easier for a quarter century.
My husband's grandmother used it 20 years ago to lose weight for a wedding and said it was the only way to go.
The Meta System also has an excellent support staff.
They were very supportive. The first time that I ordered the product, they called me and suggested that I order a lower dosage to begin with. They didn't want me to jump the gun right off the bat, and it was nice to know that they actually cared.
And the weight loss is so dramatic, people wonder.
With the Meta System, I've got many questions about how I managed raising a baby and working full-time and lose the weight and eat whatever I wanted.
People who use it recommend it.
I suggested the Meta System to my mother, and she has lost 30 pounds.
Learn more about weight loss with Judy Singer's The Meta System by calling 800-711-JUDY, 800-711-JUDY. The Meta System from Judy Singer, the powerful all-natural way to lose weight, 800-711-JUDY.
Hey, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real special forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a non-profit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its special forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
I have held the same mirror for 13 years.
I have been decorated with purple dinosaurs, baseball teams, and football helmets.
I have witnessed 33 Thanksgiving dinners and one wedding proposal.
I have tiny notches marking the growth of three children.
I have caused a learning disability.
I am the reason that a fifth grader simply can't sit still.
I am responsible for a five-year-old's rage.
Just because you can't see lead paint doesn't mean it's not on walls, doors, windows, and sills. Today, lead paint poisoning affects over 1 million children. If your home is built before 1978, your family could be at risk. Let's make all kids lead-free kids. Log on to leadfreekids.org or call 800-424-LEAD.
I am the reason a child has trouble hearing.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
Brought to you by the Coalition to End Childhood Lead Poisoning, EPA, HUD, and the Ad Council.
In Washington, Hugh Hewitt has the diagnosis.
They don't understand the need for speed.
Oh, we'll get to it. Don't worry. We'll get it done. Open amendment process, blah, 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 blah.
Not in the least bit clued in to the sense of urgency, but I don't think the Beltway is.
I'm just beginning to think it is a Beltway disease.
Kind of an invisible wall separates them from what the people think.
The Hugh Hewitt Show, weeknights from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New Choice, intelligent talk.
If you're a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, like me, coming home can be harder than expected. I felt a little out of place, but it turns out I wasn't alone. At IAVA.org, there's a free online community of thousands of OIF and OEF vets who've got your back here, just like they did over there. So now, I'm never alone. I can get the resources I need and talk to tons of people who understand where I'm coming from.
Whether it's navigating the GI Bill,
or VA hospitals,
managing the transition home,
or meeting people you can share stories with,
you'll find it at IAVA.org.
Even if it's just everyday stuff,
like getting tips on where to find a nice sweater for my dog.
Did he just say that?
Really?
What?
Okay, maybe not that, but everything else. No matter where you are, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org.
We've got your back.
Brought to you by Iraq Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Hey, folks. Jim Hansen sitting in for Frank again, and we are back with more Secure Freedom Radio. Joining me for this segment is Bill Ardolino, journalist and reporter with the Long War Journal, one of the top websites you can find at longwarjournal.org. He recently returned from a trip to Afghanistan, and we're going to talk with him about whether or not our strategy in Afghanistan is working, or I might even go so far to say is whether our strategy in Afghanistan even exists. Welcome to the show, Bill.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Look, I want to ask you a question about the fact that I've heard, you know, for a while that counterinsurgency is our strategy, but that's a pretty resource intensive, takes a lot of people, takes a lot of time and effort and energy. And I'm curious as to what you've seen, really supports that. Is that what we're doing? Are we doing that in any realistic way?
Well, we're doing it in parts of the country and we're not doing it in others. So, when I was in Helmand province last year with the Marines, they were doing resource-intensive counterinsurgency, and they were doing it right, and they were doing it effectively. Of course, we concentrated our surge in the south to begin with, so they had the troops to do it. When I was in the east just recently, you know, I talked to the commanding general of RC East on down the chain, and the officers would claim that they were still doing counterinsurgency, and they were certainly doing components of counterinsurgency, but they simply didn't have the number of troops to effectively project out into the population and do holistic counterinsurgency doctrine.
So, I mean, and what that means for folks is when you're talking about a population-centric or as Bill just mentioned, a holistic counterinsurgency, that means you have to actually get out into the villages, you have to co-locate with the people, you have to build rapport with them, you have to share their sacrifices, and you have to provide them security while you help them build the capability to provide their own security. And what you're saying, it sounds like, is that they just don't have the troops to actually go out, stay out, and pull that off.
Yeah, for example, in Helmand Province, the Marines projected out above various villages within a given district with these little patrol bases, to where they were literally sitting above a village guarding it, 24 hours a day. In the case of Host Province, where I just was, the army they had one company responsible for an entire district. So they sent out a lot of patrols. They were killing a lot of bad guys. There was a lot of JSOC night raids going on at night that are, wreaking havoc with the enemy. But during the day or at night when the Americans aren't nearby a given village, they just haven't established that credibility that, hey, we've got your backs and we're the viable alternative to the insurgent groups, either the Afghan forces or the U.S. forces.
And that really is the key. I mean, the whole point is we can't stay there and be a security blanket for these people forever. We can't stay and be the local cops. We can't be the state police. We can't be the National Guard, and we can't be their relative security in any way, shape, or form. We have to give them the room to do that themselves. But they have to make that choice, like you just mentioned, that says we are a viable alternative, because the Taliban's coming back. The Taliban will be there. The Taliban may slip back across the border into Pakistan and hide out for a while, but these people know that they'll be back. And if we don't project enough force and show these people that we will keep them safe more than the Taliban can threaten them, we don't have a prayer of convincing them to do this, do we?
Right. Yeah, I agree. I mean, basically, there's good news and bad news on this front. I would say the good news is, when I would be on a patrol, the locals would treat the Americans with, either apathy, open hostility, lukewarm friendliness. They were much friendlier to the Afghan soldiers and Afghan police. So there is like a potential for Afghan security forces to establish themselves as, the legitimate face of government. But at the same time, there isn't a very historical dependency on governance there, and the insurgent groups are very, very powerful where I was. They're the homeboys. They basically run the place and have run the place in place of a power vacuum, a tribal power vacuum that was left when the Soviets basically depopulated the whole area. So, it's very difficult for the Afghan government to get in there and establish a presence. It's possible. And I believe it could be possible if there were resources appropriated for it, but there aren't. And you can't just, you can lay this on. I do have lay some blame on the administration for pulling out the rug from under the surge strategy early. But at the same time, the force structure in this province, in Host Province, wasn't strong for 10 years. So, while the focus was on Iraq, we didn't do what needed to be done since 2001.
All right. Now, when you mentioned that the Afghan forces that were with our troops got a better reception, were they local? I mean, was this, the concept of raising local militias or raising a National Guard type force as opposed to bringing national troops in from elsewhere? Who were the Afghans who were with us?
The police are local. The army wasn't. So, they might have. I don't know specifically how local. I mean, I know some of the commanders were local. The soldiers in general, though, it's just a matter of the fact that they were Afghan. And, if they're Pashtun, even better. But they're just not, they're just not foreigners.
But as you mentioned, the local power brokers who are from around there, who have been there and who the locals know will be there, and to the extent that they have established power bases and they're going to be there, is it going to be possible, absent our support, for the Afghan forces, for the national forces to project out into these areas and provide an alternative? Do you see that as viable?
Not at this point. That's the new mission. The real new mission is sort of the Donald Rumsfeld strategy in Iraq, which we all know how well
great,
that went.
Huh? Yeah.
And then the Vietnamization strategy before that. But Major General Allen, who I interviewed, told me, yeah, we're on a glide path to success as far as building up the Afghan security forces capability. Some units do very well. A lot of the special forces trained border units do exceptionally, from what I've heard. The ANA I was with were nowhere near capable of handling themselves. And in fact, you know, one quote from an American was, if we left tomorrow, these guys would get rolled over in a second. So, you know, there is a lot more development that needs to be done. I'm not saying it's theoretically impossible, but it's not possible quickly.
Folks, we're talking with Bill Ardolino from the Long War Journal about his recent trip and multiple trips to Afghanistan and really contrasting what we've been doing there as far as counterinsurgency with what was a relatively successful, you know, strategy in Iraq. And do you see the difference being the participation of the locals in Iraq versus a difficulty doing that in Afghanistan?
It's an incredibly different country. There are incredibly different literacy levels. There is even more cultural hostility to foreigners in Afghanistan. And the tribal networks, you know, one of the reasons why, you know, the surge was a big part of it in Iraq, but, you know, the tribal awakening was probably the main show as far as I'm concerned. And I think that was enabled by the fact that there was sort of a, you know, the tribes squabbled with each other in Iraq, but there was a coherence and a cohesiveness to the system of tribal confederations where they naturally could come to work together if there was a big enough threat that they needed to unite against. In Afghanistan, there's much more separation and splintering of different tribal elements to the point where a lot of tribes are actually in open war with each other. So that is one of the factors, one of many factors that makes Afghanistan a lot more complicated than Iraq.
So do you think, all right, obviously we're not going to send any more troops there. Yeah, you know, if anything, we're pulling out. You know, we're packing up, we're turning over to the Afghans. Do you see any chance of that leaving a stable place where the Taliban does not control large swaths of the countryside?
Not really. I think it's possible. It's not to say that the Afghan government and the Afghan security forces are all collectively going to roll over tomorrow. But I think we're basically just, you know, we're setting up for a proxy war that's going to be waged for a very long time. And America's role in that is going to have a lot to do with drone strikes and a lot to do with, you know, it's basically going to be a special forces hunting ground for, you know, the next, you know, generation or so, barring some grand bargain that I don't necessarily see on the horizon, especially with intractable insurgent groups like the Haqqani Network.
Well, again, here we go with more positive, optimistic thoughts about Afghanistan. I wish it was different, but unfortunately, the reality is what it is. Folks, that's Bill Ardolino. Definitely check out the longwarjournal.org, one of the most up-to-date, comprehensive, and informative sites regarding our war, our long wars. This is Jim Hansen signing off for today's edition of Secure Freedom Radio. Frank Gaffney will be back tomorrow to keep you up to date on the threats we face and what we're doing about them.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.